Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the next newsletter on New Zealand Sport Radio, the show where a panel of football tragics discuss the latest goings on in arguably the greatest football league in the world, or at least Australasia, the Bunnings A-League. More specifically, we're here to break down the performances of the Wellington Phoenix, preview their next game, and give all of you watching and listening some views and opinions about the league in a Kiwi accent rather than an Aussie one. I'm Connor Clements, and I'm joined today by Dan Moskovitz, and we're going to be talking about our beloved Wellington Phoenix today. And our beloved Wellington Phoenix are in somewhat of a tight spot with a lot of injuries, a lot of players out. You'd have to say it's an injury crisis and also a crisis of confidence. We're not picking up points. It's getting a bit worrying. So we're going to have to really talk today about what we think we can do to get ourselves out of this bad spot, out of this rut, if you will. And I know that we both have some pretty key points to bring up about this, especially and that Central Coast Mariners game, which we just played, Dan. So let's get to that before we talk about our predicted lineups for the Western Sydney Wanderers game. Let's talk all about what we thought of our Central Coast Mariners game. And obviously, it wasn't much of a game after David Ball got himself sent off. We've had a couple of red cards in the past few weeks that we haven't deserved. That red card, I think we definitely deserved. And the referee had no choice but to give David Ball a red card because he made it very obvious. With his studs up challenge that, yeah, it was about to, it was a foregone conclusion, really. He was going to be sent from the field. So, unfortunately, Ball will be now suspended for two games, which adds to our kind of crisis of players being out. And I think of that Central Coast game, yeah, you saw De Vere go down with an injury as well. I mean, we had players left and right who were just absolutely giving everything because we had to. And I think that the main takeaway from that I can see is that we were battling. We didn't give up, which was great. But at the same time, it's disappointing because I thought we could have got more if we had had 11 players on the field the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, it was not a great game to watch. And I do agree we were battling. And there were like a couple of good signs in our early performance. I think Reno especially had a couple good runs, but for a player as experienced as David Ball, you got to expect better, and it was a very dumb decision, to put it lightly. So, yeah, it's completely lost my train of thought there. I'll just hand back to you.
No, I think it's kind of inexplicable what David Ball did, and so I can understand you losing your train of thought there, because you go into a game, you need your starting striker to really to give you that ability to counter and to give you the ability to have someone who's going to... I know David Ball isn't the best finisher, but he's an assister. He's someone who will work hard for the team. He sets up goals. And having him on the pitch is actually crucial to the Phoenix because he does so much off the ball and he endeavours so much, and that he's actually someone that we really need on the pitch. And so to have him go after 28, I think it was, minutes... in such a silly manner is so frustrating. And I know that he's going to be frustrated as well with himself. Obviously, he's just in the heat of the moment made a really silly decision and jumped in with studs shown. But as I said, the referee had, you know, no hesitation, and he shouldn't. Ball really, unfortunately, that was basically the moment that turned the match for me. And I think up until that point, you were right. We'd seen flashes from Piscopo. He'd had moments of brilliance. We'd seen the team starting to kind of build on that. Obviously, Piscopo had been out with injury, so it was just getting him back into the squad, getting him back into the unit, and we needed a bit more time to kind of gel and get together as a team and to have that kind of ability to start playing again. But unfortunately, that all went out the window, and after that, it was 60 minutes of just backs to the wall, defend, wave after wave of attack. And Central Coast this season have been good, so to have that against Central Coast and to have Ball sent off so early on is just such a nightmare, because you've got 60 minutes of players just giving it absolutely everything, which is, it's great to see from a fan's perspective, but I mean, it led to the injuries that we saw. And the players, unfortunately, they kept going right to the final whistle, but I think a defeat was always going to happen, despite the late consolation goal.
Yeah, and I hate to say I told you so, but I did predict a 2-0 loss last week.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and I think we'll get more into this when we start talking about the next game. But when De Vere got went off injured, that's how 2 over 30s off. Like, you're now looking at Stefan Marinovic as the oldest player on the pitch, and he's a keeper. There's Ulises Davila, who's 29, that might have gotten that wrong. And he's a captain, he'll always be leading. But after that, you're looking at Tim Payne. And I mean, full respect to Payne, he's a good player. But most of his experience hasn't been professional. And that dearth of experience really hurt us then and will continue to hurt us because this is a very young team.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very young team. We don't have the experience that we really need to get through games like these. And, I mean, Western Sydney is going to be a big test because we've got a young, young team, you're right. And we've got players here who obviously wouldn't be starting because their position would be taken by these more experienced guys, these veterans of the league. And it's their time to step up. I mean, this is why they're on the squad, because they need to, at these times, deliver. When the big players are out, they've got to come in and do their job. And I know that there's a couple of those players who will know that this is their big chance, especially with some of the players out 3 to 4 weeks, some even 6 weeks. They need to be in there and ready to deliver. And especially, I mean, I talked about it being an injury crisis. I think this is, at this moment in time, absolutely an injury crisis. So we are going to have these players in and about the squad for a while now, and they need to be ready to step up for sure. So let's just, I mean, we've kind of summed up the Central Coast Mariners game. As you said, 2-0, disappointing. So let's talk more about the game coming up and what we think the sides will look like in that game against Western Sydney Wanderers. So that game's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, or 8:10 p.m., sorry, with these strange kickoffs that the A-League does. So I'm going to go with, I think I'd say Marinovic has to start because he's going to be, yeah, the most experienced player. I don't think they're going to bring in Sale for ball this. Cool. So, yeah, big call. I'm going to say McGarry, Tim Payne at centre-back, Hudson Weihongi as well alongside him, because obviously Laws, although he's training with the team, I don't think he's going to be fit and ready to go just yet. I think he'll maybe come back against Melbourne Victory on Wednesday, but we'll have to wait and see about that. And then Fenton on the right. Then, so replacing Tim Payne, obviously, because he's come across to the centre. Fenton goes to the right. Then I'm going to go with the 4-2-2-2, because I think that Ife's going to go back to that. I know we've been playing a 4-2-3-1 recently, but I'm going to say he's going to go back to the 2-2. And because he's brought in a young striker who we haven't mentioned, Lachlan Lingoy, if he brings him in and he wants to start him straight away, this is what I think is going to happen. So Rufer and Devlin, the two CDMs. Then you've got Davila and Piscopo. And then up top, you've got Wayne and Lachlan Lingoy. That's how I think the Phoenix will set up. And I think Ife trusts, with his time at Sydney, I think he trusts Lachlan Lingoy to make an impact. Once again, I'm not sure if the impact he's going to make is going to be goals, because he's not a striker who's proven in the A-League to score. I don't think he scored a goal in the A-League. However, he's been killing it at National Premier League level in Australia. So he's been scoring goals for fun there. But the A-League, as we all know, is a bit of a step up from the National Premier League. So it remains to be seen whether he can deliver. But I think Ife saw enough of him at Sydney FC that he said, you know what, I think this can be the guy who comes in and makes a difference. With David Ball suspended, with Tomer Hemed injured, he's saying, hey, look, these are two guys who are crucial to the team. They're both gone. David Ball for 2 games, Hemed for maybe 3 or 4 even with his injury. So we needed to bring someone in, and he's moved quickly. He's brought someone in, and I'm glad to see that. And now I think he goes straight into the starting 11 because, yeah, we need strikers.
With Lachlan Lingoy, I may be slightly more pensive about it because I mentioned this last week, and I think it's a fairly common feeling about among the Knicks fans is that we have Ben Wayne, ready-made striker, from Ife, and now pre-Lokalingo purchase, he was our main striker, and by main, I mean only, which is obviously concerning. So when I was thinking about what I was going to say in regards to Lokalingo saying, what kept coming up to me was when Mark Rudan signed Ante Kovac for a week, when Stefan Marinovic was, sorry, not Stefan Marinovic, Philip Curto was injured back in 2018-19. And so what I would have loved to see happen was Ufi maybe try and bring in someone quite experienced who can maybe be there to help guide Wayne when everything is falling onto his shoulders. But Lokalingo, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to attack Lokalingo because there's no reason for me to do that just yet. We haven't seen him play. But he's 23. That doesn't give me an experienced striker who can help out Wayne vibes, which is kind of what I was hoping for. Because, I mean, if you're not going to trust Ben Wayne now, when are you going to trust Ben Wayne? And I do think it's been concerning how Ben Wayne hasn't been given many minutes so far this season. And so, look, I mean, what I really don't want this to come off as is an attack on Lokalingo, because that's not what this is. But I'm just pensive as to what this signing means for Ben Wayne. And then leading into my predicted 11 from that, I think Ufi's going to stick with the 4-2-3-1. Purely because you have two strikers. If Wayne or Lokalingo gets suspended or injured, then you're like probably trying to fit Reno Piscopo as a striker, and Reno Piscopo is not a striker.
No. So, and neither is Davila, as we learned.
Yeah, neither is Davila. So I think in terms of starting lineup, I think we're sticking with the 4-2-3-1. Maybe probably not Ufi's what Ufi wants to do, but when you have two strikers, I think it's kind of mandatory, because you just can't risk it, because sometimes in these positions, when you're on a run of bad luck with injuries, things just pile up. So I think I entirely agree with you on the back line. Marinovic, Tiarafai, Hudson, Wahongi, Tim Payne, Louis Fenton. You have to start Payne at centre back because he's, I mean, I knocked it a bit before, but he is our most experienced defender right now, and we need experience more than we need anything else at this point in time. Then Devlin and Rufa, that's a given. But I think in the attacking midfield trio, or wings and attacking midfield trio, looking at Piscopo, Davila, Lewis, and then just because I don't think we've seen much confidence placed in Ben Wayne so far, I think Charles Lokalingo is going to go straight into the starting 11.
Interesting, okay. Interesting. You really think that Ufi's not really backing Ben Wayne to start at all, which is tough. It's tough because as a fan, you really want to see that player get a chance, and that's why I sacrificed Lewis out of my starting 11. So you would have seen that's the main difference I have, included Ben Wayne and Lokalingo. I think the main reason I did that was because I just regarded the fact that you know we could be really unlucky with injuries, and then if one of those guys goes down, obviously that's a big loss, and so we have to kind of switch automatically to the 4-2-3-1 again if that happens. But I think it's a risk worth taking, especially as I know that Ufi just loves that formation. But the main reason I said that was to get Wayne in, because I think that Wayne deserves a chance, absolutely, because he's been there, he needs it. This will also give Sutton a chance as well from the bench, which is good. And so we'll have the likes of, you know, Matt Redenton, Clayton, well, for me, Clayton Lewis and Sutton on the bench. And that would be fantastic to have all those Kiwi lads get a chance. And if you're an Aussie, you're looking at maybe McGing on the bench as well to get a chance off the bench, potentially. But I think that he can't go into the starting lineup because the other guys around him are needed more. So Hudson Wehongi, a CDM who has been converted into a centre back. Tim Payne, a centre mid who's also been converted into a right back, but will be fine at centre back, and we know he will do a job there. So those two guys actually vastly experienced in the New Zealand ISPS under premiership before this in midfield roles, I think will be fine as a centre back pairing. I mean, I say fine. They'll be good. I'm not sure if they're going to have the same level that De Vea and Taylor brought, obviously, because they brought a lot more to the position with their experience. But I think that Payne and Hudson Wihongi will do a job there. I just would love to see, and I think it'd be really gutting if he does put Lokolingoi up top in a 4-2-3-1 by himself. I'd love to see Ben Wayne get a chance. And I know you would too, but you're saying that just because you think that Uffie's been a bit harsh on old Ben Wayne. And I think the other point I wanted to make is that although Lokolingoi is not experienced as you would, I mean, he's 20-something, 23, he's young. I think that the reason we went out and got him was just because we have no experience left because of injuries, and so we needed someone to fill that role. And I think that it makes sense to put him and Ben Wayne up top together, because I think having one of them up top leading the line by themselves is going to be too much of an ask. So having each other to rely on is something that I'd want to see. Like, and I know that puts us at risk of another injury, but I think I'd rather have those two up top as a kind of, they can feed off each other, and they can, I know it'll be like probably their first like interaction apart from like maybe two training sessions. But I think that having each other up top and having a pivot, someone to pivot off or someone to work off, will help Ben Wayne, and it will help Lokolingoi as well, because I don't think they're really ready to lead the line by themselves just yet. That would be my main kind of rebuttal to your 4-2-3-1 suggestion.
I mean, to be honest, I hope we go for the 4-2-2-2 purely because we're in a bad run of luck, and the 4-2-3-1 with our best and most experienced players in the squad, we haven't been getting results in. And I think it's about time Uffie tries to change things up. But that being said, I still hold the view that I just don't know if that there would be a risk I'd be willing to take to have another player injured. Although, then again, like, if Lokolingoi or Wayne were to injure themselves, you revert back to the 4-2-3-1 for the victory game on Wednesday, and then David Ball's back inside, and you can play, and you can go back to the 4-2-2-2, albeit, again, with the fear of possibly not having any other strikers to come in and play.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the main thing. And I think that's the main kind of point between both of us, whether Uffie goes, okay, I don't want to risk it, I'm going to play the 4-2-3-1, or whether he goes, you know what, I've got two strikers now, I'm going to risk it. They're both young. The chances of them getting injured are lower. I'm just going to go for it and say, like, let's play that 4-2-2-2 that he loves so much. I think he's going to go for that one. You think he's going to go for the safer option? It remains to be seen. Everyone tune in, obviously, tomorrow night and have a look to see what happens, whether we do play the 4-2-3-1. If he starts Ben Wayne, if he starts Charles Lokolingoi, it remains to be seen. And if maybe they both get a start, maybe he goes with the two young strikers up top playing off each other like I suggested, and maybe they get a chance. So, yeah, I'll be really interested to see what happens there. Looking forward to Phoenix games, even though we do have this injury crisis. I'll just read them out for you, just so you know who we have injured. De Vea, Laws, Soterio, Hemed, and suspended is Ball. So those are all the experienced guys in the team, all gone. So it's a very young team. Obviously, the oldest, Marinovic and Davila, and then everyone else is in their 20s, and then some of them are even in their late teens. So very, very excited to see how this young team can go. And this is the opportunity for them to take with both hands and really say to Uffie, like, hey, look, I'm ready for this spot. I'm ready for the A-League, and I'm ready to take my chance. And if Ben Wayne was perhaps to bag a goal or two, if Lokolingoi comes in and gets a goal or two, who knows, maybe we'll be singing their praises come the season end. It's just a massive chance for these guys. That's the way I think we have to look at it, is that we'll take the positives from this and say the youth are going to have a moment to shine, and the experienced guys will have to obviously take their rest and take a step away from the spotlight for a moment to give these young guys a chance to shine. And I hope that they can shine, and I hope we don't get embarrassed, because that would be gutting. So I hope these guys really do have a good game against Western Sydney Wanderers. And I'm glad it's against a team like Western Sydney Wanderers with Melbourne Victory to come up, because I think that those are both winnable games. If it had been against the likes of a Sydney FC or even the Central Coast Mariners this season, who've been a completely different beast, and much respect to them and their organisation for turning their form around after such shocking years, yeah, I think it would be a different story. So let's hope that these guys can go out and put together a performance that they can be proud of. You go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, and just in case you missed the news, Cam Devlin is back in the squad and match fit this week. So,
which is small crucial.
Amount of good news.
Yeah, crucial. Yeah, and Laws is training again as well, which is another spot of good news, although he probably won't be fit in time for this match. But having Cammy Devlin back is massive. I mean, he's been so crucial to the way Ufi likes to play. He's such a dynamo in midfield. He does so much running. And we really did miss him last week, especially after the sending off. You could see it. Everyone was just knackered. And having Redenton to come on off the bench is good. And having, if they go with my lineup, if he does choose to leave Lewis on the bench, I think he's a great player. And it's definitely no slight to him that I've put him on the bench. It's just the way that I saw it going. I think Piscopo and Davila can offer more creatively. But I think Lewis coming in off the bench, and even if it was him to start and Piscopo coming off the bench, they both offer so much that I'd be happy if either of them started, to be honest, because I think that we do have that depth now and those younger players to come on and make a dent in the game. And also Sutton as well. I'd love to see him get some minutes off the bench too, now that we have all these injuries.
What my mind keeps coming back to when I think about an injury crisis is Manchester United in the 2015-16 season. So for those that don't know, I'm normally a United fan. I don't really follow the Premier League as much as I used to, but that season, United just got decked with injury after injury after injury. But that was a season where Marcus Rashford got his chance and it just hasn't looked back since. So, you know, maybe Ben Wayne or Sam Sutton can be our new Marcus Rashford.
How good would that be? What a story.
That would be beautiful. But Manchester United that season had the advantage of being able to dip into their academy quite readily, which is probably, I think, the harshest part of all this, is that this is a golden chance for the academy boys to get there, to take an opportunity with both hands and lay a claim to a place in the first team. And if they want to do that, they have to spend 2 weeks in quarantine, after which maybe everyone's back and ready to play. So it's, I think, honestly, the Weenix are probably who I feel most sorry for in this whole shebang, because this should have been their moment, really.
Yeah, no, it should have been. And yeah, we'll have to wait and see whether they do eventually lift the quarantine, and so those players can have their chance to go up into that. Yeah, fingers crossed that they have their chance to go up and play in that first team, especially when we have all these injuries. But as you say, at this moment, it's kind of all shut down. Those players can't go across, so we won't be able to bolster our squad with any of those players. And obviously it's tough for those players who are injured as well, because they can't go home and get treatment with people they know. They have to go out to these physios in Australia, who I'm sure will do a great job, but it's different. It's definitely different, and just brings you back to that whole thing of like playing away from home. It's a very kind of tough experience. So hats off to all those players, especially those ones who are injured and having to rehab in a hotel. It's tough. It's really tough. So yeah, much respect to them. Moving on. I don't think we have much trivia. Dan, do you have any trivia hidden away up your sleeve?
I do. I didn't put them in the dock this week. So nice. My first question is actually a two-parter, because the original question I came up with I thought was too hard. And the second question, which I came up to replace that, I thought was too easy. So we'll see how this goes. So who was our opponent the last time the Phoenix played at Westpac Stadium?
Oh, wow. Who was our opponent? All right, people watching and listening, make sure that you get your guesses in as well. I'm just pausing just for those who watch the recording as well, see if they can guess it before me. Who was our last opponent at Westpac? I'm going to say Melbourne City.
Very close, Victory.
Ah, the victory. Okay. Mm.
3-0 win. It was a great game. As in, that was back when I was in press conference. And it was really hard for both Carlos Salvatore and Fukutale, because when all the journalists went down to the press gallery, there was right as Australia announced a quarantine for anyone coming into the nation. Yeah. So there were no questions about the football. All right, bonus round. Who was the last player to score for the Phoenix at Westpac?
So in that 3-0 win, who scored? Interesting.
Just who was the last one to score?
Who was the last one to score? Man, how long ago was that, eh? That's crazy thinking about.
It's been nearly a year since we were at Westpac.
I
miss A-League football.
And it's funny that we still call it Westpac as well, even though it's changed to Sky Stadium.
Crap, I didn't even realize.
It is one of those things, though. You're just so used to it. And we always say, like, just call it the Cake Tin or the Ring of Fire or whatever. You know what? I'm blanking on this, but I'm just going to go on a limb, and I'm going to say Ball.
Good job.
Yeah, nice. I'll take it.
You got the one which I was worrying. You didn't get the one I was worrying which was too easy, but you got the one which I thought was too hard.
Nice. Yeah. No, I'll take it. I'll take it. All right. I've got a trivia question for you, just one this time, and you would have seen it in the doc, so you may have had a chance to research, but I think you'll know it anyway, and I think most people will anyway. What international team is former Wellington Phoenix player Paul Eiffel now coaching?
Okay, so I didn't do research. I've been relying on my memory.
Yeah.
I really hope I don't get this wrong, because it'll be embarrassing, but is it the Solomon Islands?
Oh, no, it's incorrect. It's not the Solomon Islands, and I tell you what, it's funny. I put you on the big screen in the hot seat actually for that one. That was quite fun. But actually, he's going to be coaching Samoa Women. Oh. That's the team that he's going to be coaching. So Paul Eiffel, if you didn't know, he's had a big history with the women's game here. He founded his Paul Eiffel Academy in the Wairarapa, took it across to Tasman, was doing all sorts of work with both men and women, or youth teams, so girls and boys. And then he was working with the Wairarapa women's first team. And then he was also helping out with their reserves, actually, which is awesome. And now he's going to coach the Samoa women's team. So congratulations to Paul Eiffel. And, I'm sure the Samoa women's team will be better for it because, yeah, he's a fantastic coach and great player, obviously, when he was playing for the Phoenix. We loved him.
Embarrassing. I am annoyed about that.
I tell you what, it was good. I'm glad you didn't do any research because it meant that I stumped you, so I'm happy about that. We've got a question come through as well, so we'll answer this from Simon Hughes. In the future, do you think the Wellington Phoenix should move to a smaller stadium in Wellington? So after all our Westpac/Sky Stadium chat, yes, I would absolutely love them to move to a smaller stadium, Simon. I think that Westpac/Sky Stadium, the Cake Tin, Ring of Fire, is too big. And I've never, in terms of when it packs out, I love it. It's a beautiful stadium. It's fantastic. You can't have any better. However, whenever there's a smaller crowd, maybe 11, 12,000 people, even less sometimes we get for the Phoenix, unfortunately, maybe 6, 7,000 people, it just becomes a cavernous atmosphere where you don't really feel close to the players. You feel like you're removed from the action. It's not as fun. On those nights when there's 30,000 people in there, I 100% would have football in there every time of the week, but we don't have enough people in there to really justify that. So I think moving to a smaller boutique stadium is ideal. I think we should get maybe 15,000, have it in a nice square like a football stadium should be, have it right up close, the fans are right up close to the pitch, and it would be amazing. It would be electric. The atmosphere would be increased tenfold. I think that would be so much better. So for me, Simon, I think that we should definitely have a smaller stadium that the Phoenix move to in the future. Dan?
I mean, yes, but I remember back when I was writing for the Football Sack, I was told to write an opinion article, and I wrote an entire opinion article saying we should move.
Mm.
And like when I was editing it, I came to the conclusion, hang on, where? That's, and so I didn't issue. End up publishing that. I wrote an entirely different article, and that sucked. But I would love nothing more for the Knicks to be in a boutique stadium. But, and I mean, we've seen this in the A-League a lot, and it's been beautiful, but where do you put them? Like, only one which comes to mind is a Hutt recreational ground, but that has a problem of being in the Hutt and not in Wellington. And Wellington, unfortunately, is about the hilliest place on earth. So I just don't know where you'd put the stadium. So, like, if we could, it'd be ideal. But I don't know where you'd put it. I don't know how we'd get the money for it, because I don't know. I can't imagine the council being very keen to splurge who knows how much money on a football-based stadium for in a country which is treats football third best. Yeah, I think unless Gareth Morgan and the other owners of Wellnex suddenly find a cool gazillion dollars in their pocket that they want to invest in the Phoenix, I think we're sticking in the Ring of Fire for at the very least the medium term.
How good would it be though, like to have that football only kind of stadium where you just have the Phoenix all the time? It would be so good. It would be fantastic. And I mean, I would love to see that article that you wrote suggesting we move, because I know you said you didn't publish it. So I think maybe that could be something that we release on Total Football NZ, because I'm always interested, like, as a kind of hypothetical, like, hey, what if the Phoenix did move? Like, look at all these benefits, look at what we could enjoy. Because I know that the question is always where do we go? And I think that Fraser Park, that Hutt recreation area that you suggested, could definitely be it. Unfortunately, there's just too many other teams who use it, like baseball. There's a baseball diamond there. There's, I think, rugby league was playing there at one point. But if they all moved somewhere else, you could really redevelop that space. And I think the Phoenix are going in that direction because they've really taken over that whole area. You could really develop that space so that you have that artificial turf, but then you build a stadium over by where those grounds are at the moment, and you turn that whole area, like Fraser Park 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, into a nice stadium. Because at the moment, I mean, those pitches, like, to be honest, I would not be fussed at all about them disappearing because I don't like them. And I would love to just have a beautiful stadium in that in space instead. So you'd have the artificial turf where the reserves would play, and then you would have the stadium right there, and you'd have more pitches. If you took away that baseball diamond, you took away that old decrepit stand there at Fraser Park that's been there, I think, back from rugby league days. You took that away, you built more pitches there, you could have a really beautiful venue. And then the other thing that you'd have to think about would be lots of car parks, because you're going to have people driving away from Wellington, and you'll have people as well. I think the train goes relatively close there, so you'll have people walking in from the train station. But I think that could work. I'd say Fraser Park makes sense. They're building facilities there as we speak. Why not just up it and make it a stadium?
Money.
Yeah. I mean, that's the main thing. And also, if we're not going to stay in the A-League, then, like, if the A-League folds, which people have been saying for years, that the doomsayers have been going, oh, the league might not be around for much longer, you know, the deals are falling through and people aren't happy with the FFA, and there's always rumblings about the league not being, you know, sustainable. So maybe that's the main drawback. But I think that in the long run, if we want football to be a success and we want football to continue to be built in this country as something that our young players can go through and actually earn a living and play, we need to establish some sort of professional game here. Like, we need to have some sort of league where we can feed into other leagues with players that are already professionals. And I think that at the moment, we're just having one professional club isn't enough. We need to expand. And I, as a football fan, I'm always going to say that. And I know that there'll be many people going, like, well, no, like, you know, most of the country disagrees with you. We don't want to see that. But I think having a stadium that is the New Zealand football stadium that isn't North Shore would be great, because at the moment, North Shore isn't, it's not the stadium we need. I think the stadium we need should be somewhere in Wellington, and having a stadium in Lower Hutt that is the New Zealand football stadium would be fantastic. Or having two, even, like having North Shore, but also having a stadium in Fraser Park. I think would work. It's just, you're right, the money. Where do we find that?
Yeah, I, like you, I love nothing more to see Phoenix, well, just not, maybe not even Phoenix, just a professional league in New Zealand. And, I mean, my source here is Wikipedia, but I do remember reading that football in New Zealand and it being the most popular sport amongst young people. So, you know, maybe there's a smidgen of hope that New Zealand could one day support a professional league. Grasping at straws here, but that's the life of a Phoenix fan, to grasp at straws. But yeah, I mean, I think what you touched on there is that Auckland's addition to the A-League, which I think may be something we discuss more in another episode, but yeah, it's one football club is not enough, and with the league now in the hands of the clubs, I don't think anyone would object if Auckland's people have the will and the cash. I think there'll be shoo-ins to get into the A-League next time we have a round of expansion, because it is the most untapped market. That sentence doesn't make sense. The biggest untapped market in Australasia. And yeah, you've got the Knights and the Kings, but it's been a very long time since the Knights were around. And I think it's about time we give Auckland another go. And we should definitely discuss an Auckland addition to the A-League more in another episode.
Yeah, I think we can discuss that and also promotion relegation. But thank you for that question, Simon. You've got us all on these topics of talking about how we think the league could be better and bigger and grander, which is always nice. And if the Wellington Phoenix were to have their own stadium, their special stadium built for them, so we didn't have to share with, for example, the Hurricanes, yeah, that would be fantastic. And yeah, it would mean that rugby could go, like, just have their own stadium. Cricket could have their own stadium, and we'd have our own stadium for football. So that would be great. There'd be less ground sharing. There'd be more people watching, I'm sure. And it would be a better atmosphere for everyone involved, because we all know that when we only get 7,000 or 8,000 to the Cape Town, it just doesn't have the same energy as a small stadium would. If you could spread, you know, 8,000 around a 15,000 seat of ground, it would still absolutely bounce on those weeknights and those weekends when we play. So I hope that is the future of the Phoenix, and I hope that the money can come through. But for now, we just have to wait and see whether we ever will be back in Sky Stadium, or whether we'll have to just keep playing in Wollongong for a long time. Yeah, it remains to be seen with this whole quarantine thing. And as Dan said with his trivia questions, we do miss our football being played at home in New Zealand, and we hope that it comes back very, very soon. We'll take whatever we can get, and whether it's played at a boutique stadium or in the Sky Stadium, it doesn't matter. We just want to see them play at home. All right, thank you for joining the show. You can catch up on all the A-League results every morning at 7 a.m. with the morning sports briefing, and you can get your weekly Phoenix fix at 9 a.m. next Saturday. Don't forget to go whack New Zealand Sports Radio a few dollars on Patreon if you can. It increases our motivation to be back here each week and results in higher production quality. But for now, I'm Connor Clements, and I've been joined today by Dan Moskovitz. Thank you very much for watching the Knicks newsletter.